In 1972, a young entrepreneur named Richard Branson turned his mail-order record business into a brick-and-mortar store, which he named Virgin Records. Today, the company, which is now called Virgin Group, is much more than a record store, comprising more than 40 companies that include airlines, financial services, communications, and even space travel. And Branson himself has stakes in more than 400 companies ranging from travel, media, healthcare, and finance. Branson was knighted by Queen Elizabeth II in 2000 and continues to be a prominent global figure for his philanthropy and his adventure and marketing stunts. Such as crossing the Atlantic Ocean in a hot air balloon and kite surfing across the English Channel. Branson recently sat down with Carlyle Group co-founder David Rubenstein. They spoke on David Rubenstein's Bloomberg television program, Peer-to-Peer Conversations.
You've written two books. One is Losing Your Virginity, and one is Finding Your Virginity. And in those books, you describe this incredible path, how you've gone from very modest meanings to this great wealth. When you started life, you were not a great scholar. As a young boy, because you had dyslexia. When did you realize you had dyslexia, and was it a problem for you early on?
In conventional schooling terms, it was a big problem. I mean, I would sit at the back of the class, look at the blackboard, and it was just a jumble. And I was thought of as a bit lazy, a bit thick, or a mixture of the two. If I was interested in something, I generally excelled. And what I was interested in was what was going on in the world. So the Vietnamese War was going on. There was a general sort of 60s sort of uprising of students taking place. And so I decided to start a magazine to campaign against the things that I thought were wrong in the world, in particular the Vietnamese War.
And this was when you were 15 years old?
Yeah.
So you dropped out of school at more or less 15 or so. You start the magazine, and as part of the magazine, you get interviews with some prominent people, one of whom was Mick Jagger. Or is it hard to get an interview with Mick Jagger when you're 15 years old?
Do you know, I think in some ways, if you're 15... you have a better chance of getting interviews with people than if you're, 30 or 40 or 50. I would just turn up at people's houses doorstop them. And because I was young and enthusiastic, they generally took pity on me.
Ultimately, you decided to start a record company. Where did you get that idea from? And where did the name Virgin come from? Why not Branson?
We were sitting, I was, 15, 16 years old, we were sitting in the basement with a bunch of girls, and we were throwing out ideas, and we got down to either slip disc records, because of the black vinyls that always had scratches and slipped, or Virgin. And one of the girls laughed and said, well, we're all virgins, and you're virgin at business, why don't you call it Virgin?
Did she get a finder's fee for that idea or not?
I can't remember. If she's out there, she can be delighted to give her one. It's very fortunate because we've gone into so many different sectors, so many different businesses. We've been a virgin, in all of these different sectors. Slip Disc Airlines would not have
probably
been a
wouldn't
good...
have worked. So you start a record company, and initially it's a record a retailer. Right.
Yeah, we started. Initially, it was a mail order, selling records much cheaper than anybody else had done. And then, so we were the first people to sell records at a discount. And then there was a mail order strike for 6 weeks. And so we went looking for a very, very cheap music store in Oxford Street.
Then you start building Virgin mega stores, gigantic stores. And you had a lot of stores in UK and other places. How many did you have at one point?
We had about 300 megastores around the world in all the main places like Times Square, Champs-Élysées, Oxford Street, at the heyday of when, you know, of when music was really all that young people did. I mean, before games, before mobile phones, before all the other things that young people
did. The success was the Virgin name, your self-promotion of it, or you were selling things cheaper than other people? What was the...
So Virgin was synonymous with, you know, music credibility. So Frank Zappa or the Rolling Stones. I mean, you know, so we had a very credible brand. And, you know, one day... there was a young artist came to me with a fantastic tape, and I took it to a number of record companies, and they, none of them would put it out. So I thought, screw that, we'll start our own record company, and we put it out on our own record company, and it was called Tubular Bells by Mike Oldfield, and it became a great success.
So you have a record retailing company and a record production company, both called Virgin.
Yep.
Somebody drew a V for you to be your logo.
We decided we needed a slightly hipper looking label, and somebody just came up with this very simple signature.
But then you decide, well, I need to start an airline. Where did that idea come from?
It came from, I was trying to get from Puerto Rico to the Virgin Islands. I was 28 years old, and I had a lovely lady waiting for me. And
you went to the Virgin Islands because you liked the name Virgin, I assume, right?
Exactly. and that, actually, that's true. And anyway, American Airlines bumped us, and I'd been away from this lady for 3 weeks, so I went to the back of the airport. I hired a plane. I hope my credit card wouldn't bounce. I got a blackboard. I wrote Virgin Airlines one way, $39 to BVI. It went to all the other people who were bumped, and I filled up my first plane. And when we landed in the BVI, the passenger next to me said, "You know, sharpen up the service a bit, and you could be in the airline business." And I thought, okay. So the next day, I rang up Boeing and said, "Do you have any secondhand 747s for sale?" We started with one secondhand 747 against British Airways 300 planes and Pan Am and TWA's 300 planes. British Airways launched a dirty tricks campaign against us, and they did everything they could to drive us out of business. And we took them to court. We won the biggest damages in British history. It was Christmas time. We distributed it to all our staff. I think every year they hope the British Airways will launch a dirty tricks campaign against us.
So people like the fact that you were against the establishment airline. And well, one time I read that you what's now called the Eye, I guess it's the big Ferris wheel in London, the British Air was supporting it, and they couldn't get it assembled. They couldn't actually get the thing to work. And you rented a blimp?
We actually had a little blimp company just outside London, and we scrambled the blimp and we flew over the eye that was still lying flat on the ground, and all the world's press were there to watch this eye being erected, and all we said was, you know, BA can't get it up on the side of the airship.
So how did the newspapers were able to say
that? We got the headlines. They didn't.
So it turned out pretty well, and then you began building other companies. Did you always think that the name Virgin and your creativity could get them off the ground?
Well, the only reason we would go into a new sector is if we felt it was being badly run by other people. So the reason we went into trains was the government were running trains. British Rail was dilapidated trains. You know, a miserable service, and we just felt, we could go in, we could get fantastic new rail stock, we could motivate the staff, and we could make a big difference. And so we took over, you know, the busiest line in Britain, the West Coast Main Line, and we've gone from 8 million passengers to nearly 40 million passengers, I think transformed the experience for people. You know, in every new sector that we've gone into, we've seen, you know, a gaping gap in the market where the big guys have not been doing it very well, and where we can come in and shake up an industry.
So, how many companies have you started with the name Virgin? Is it a few hundred by now?
It's in excess of 300.
300, and everyone presumably hasn't worked. A couple just couldn't have worked. So, when you start them and they don't work, you just end them after a year or so, or?
Yeah, I mean...
But none of them have ever been filed for bankruptcy.
We've been fortunate. We've never had a bankrupt company. And if something doesn't work out, we'll make sure that we settle all the debts and then move on to the next company.
Is there something in your life you haven't achieved that you'd like to achieve?
We've spent 14 years working on our space program, and it's been tough. And space is tough. It is rocket science, and I think we are on the verge of finally fulfilling that dream. Before the end of the year, I hope to be, sitting in a Virgin Galactic spaceship going to space.
You've got about 200,000 people, or maybe more now, that signed up. Are they still there, ready to go?
Well, I mean, actually signed up and paid up, it's about 800.
What does it cost to pay up?
It's $250,000. There's about 50% of people watching this program would love to go to space, and there's about 50% who think these people are mad. What on earth do they want to go to space for? But the market of people who want to go to space is gigantic, and we hope to be able to satisfy quite a few of those people.
Do you think you can make a profit on this in the end, or is it really just a love of doing this?
So I never go into a venture with the idea of making a profit. If you can create the best in its field, generally speaking, you'll find that you'll pay the bills and you'll make a profit.
So the way, as I understand it, works, it's not like a rocket goes off. You have an airplane, and attached to it is another airplane, and the one that separates goes into outer space. Is that right?
The one that drops will then fire its rocket, and you'll go in about 0 to 10 seconds. You'll be traveling at 3,000 miles an hour. Into space.
And how long would you be in space under the ride that you were talking
about? So the whole experience would be something like 3 hours.
So will you be on the first flight?
I'll be on the first official flight. Very brave astronauts who are effectively test pilots who are testing the craft time and time again and ironing out anything that can go wrong before myself and members of the public go out.
So I'm sure it'll be safe, but one time when you were doing hot air ballooning, you weren't sure whether you would survive.
With the ballooning adventures, I was doing something that that nobody had done before. I was trying to fly across the Atlantic or the Pacific or go around the world in a balloon. I was flying at 40,000 feet in the jet stream, with one other person, Per Lindstrand, the technology was completely unproven. We were the test pilots.
That was more dangerous.
Things could go wrong, and they did go wrong.
But you set a number of Guinness World Records for that. But in hindsight, do you have any regrets about taking those risks on the hot air balloon?
It's interesting. My son and daughter now are setting themselves big adventures every year, dragging their dad along on some of them. And I think as a family, we feel, live life to its full. You can die in a road accident. You can die on just a normal bike ride. And quite often when you're actually completely focused on an adventure, it's less likely in some way that you're going to die in an adventure because you're ready and sharp and know how to deal with it.
So you're very well recognized for all the things you've done around the world, but also your hair and your goatee are fairly well recognized. So did this always have you had a goatee most of your adult life, and your hair is always this length?
I've been a hippie, yep, ever since I was 15 years old, and I've had a beard pretty well ever since I was 16 years old. So I shaved it off once when we launched a company called Virgin Brides, and I put a bridal dress on gave people a good laugh. And we found there weren't any virgin brides, so that business didn't succeed for very long. Or maybe it was the fact that I didn't look the most fetching bride.
So now you're a sir, you're knighted. Did you ever expect to be a member of royalty, in effect, or knighted?
We once put out a record called God Save the Queen by the Sex Pistols on the Silver Jubilee, and then I find myself 25 years later being knighted by, and I was slightly nervous if she'd remembered the words on the record that you know, it would have been a slice of the head rather than a tap on the shoulder, but she forgave us anyway. Well,
this wasn't done at the Tower of London, I guess. So
fortunately, it wasn't done in the Tower of London.
For those that may not know about Necker Island, as I understand it, in the late 1970s, there was an opportunity to buy an island in the British Virgin Islands.
Yeah, I mean, they wanted $5 million for this beautiful island. I thought I could scrape together about $100,000, so I offered $100,000. Nobody else, fortunately, came to see the island. So a year later, they said, if I make it $120,000, we'd have an island. And I went everywhere to borrow and beg to get that $120,000. And we ended up with the most beautiful island in the world.
So you've built a house there, and there's also a resort.
Necker has become, it is our home. It's, a magical place. And, you know, we have fantastic get-togethers of people, sometimes conferences there where we try to sort out the problems of the world, or just people come on holiday and either book the whole island.
Barack Obama and Michelle Obama managed to go to Necker Island.
He was good enough to invite me to the Oval Office for lunch about 3 months before he stepped down, and we had a lovely lunch. We basically agree with each other on most aspects of life.
So I guess he was a nice house guest.
Both of them are absolutely delightful, and and I think we had a fun competition, and anyway, he beat me. He learnt to kite before I could foil board, and. It was a great privilege to spend time with them.
You've met a lot of great leaders. You've brought a lot of them together in something called the Elders, which are people like Nelson Mandela and others who were great leaders in their time. And you were very close to Nelson Mandela.
Very close. I was very lucky that for 10 years we knew each other very well. And so we set up the Elders, which are 12 incredible men and women who go into conflicts and try to resolve conflicts. And if you conflicts, I think, are maybe the most important thing, because if you have a conflict, everything else breaks down.
What is it that makes great leadership, in your view?
I think being a really good listener is one of the key things. And I think when I sit around, listening to the elders talk in elders meetings, you realize that, why they've become elders is because, they've spent their lifetime listening and absorbing, and then only speaking, choosing their words carefully. I think loving people. I mean, I think a genuine love of everybody. Looking for the best in people. I mean, even if they're being a pain, You can normally find the best in pretty well anybody.
So when you're a business leader, if you're a business leader, somebody's watching this and wants to be Richard Branson or Sir Richard Branson, what is the key?
Surrounding yourself with great people. Learning to delegate early on, not trying to do everything yourself. Making sure you've got the kind of people that are praising the team around them, not criticizing the people. Having people who are willing to really innovate, be bold, and create something which everybody who works for the company can be really proud of.
Now, one of the great things about your life is you've had a terrific family life. You've been married for more than 40 years. Where did you meet your wife?
I met her in a recording studio called The Manor, which is a studio we had in the UK.
And was it love at first sight? Or?
It was from my point of view. It was just, look, she was making a cup of tea. I looked across the room and I was absolutely smitten. And she was with somebody else. I'm afraid, chase her. And my nickname became Tagalong because a friend who worked at Virgin knew her. And I would ask her if I could tag along when she was going out to dinner.
Well, it worked out. And you have two children who you're very close to. I always think it's important if somebody successful can do this while their parents are alive. And your father died a few years ago, but he lived to be close to
93.
93. Yeah. Your mother is still alive. What was it like having your parents see your success?
Oh, look, it was wonderful to be able to share it with them. My mum, you know, that my first $200 that I got to start my business, my mum found a necklace and went to the police station, handed it in, and nobody claimed it, and she managed to sell it for $200, and that was the critical money that helped me start, and you know, we managed to sort of share, you know, this wonderful life that I've been lucky enough to lead with them, and with my mother, we still do.
In the philanthropic world, what would you say is the thing you're most focused on in the philanthropic humanitarian area?
We're a little bit of a sort of serial philanthropist in the same way that, you know, we were a serial entrepreneur, in that I find it difficult saying no to, you know, projects that I feel are important.
Did you ever think when you were growing up that you'd be wealthy enough to give away staggering sums of money?
I certainly never dreamed that the incredible dream of my life would have actually happened, and that I would one day be in a position to hopefully make a difference.
Well, many times people who become financially successful and otherwise are well known, they seem to be unhappy for some reason. But you seem to be a very happy person, very content. Is that a fair assessment?
I just think I'd be a very sad person if I wasn't a very happy person. I've been blessed to have absolutely lovely lady. We're complete opposites, but you know, we get on great. Blessed to been together most of our lives. Blessed to have wonderful children, wonderful grandchildren, and every day I'm learning. I see life as the one long university education I never had. I'm learning something new from, you know, getting out there, listening to people, I scribble everything down, and I feel like I am a perpetual student.
Well, let me ask you a question I've asked Bill Gates. Do you think you could have been more successful in life if you had a university degree? Obviously, you couldn't be more successful.
Age 40, I turned to my wife and said, I think I might give everything up and go to university. She turned to me and said, you just want to go and chat up those young ladies at the university. You go straight back to work. And it was good advice.